You're looking for a stocks and shares ISA?
The award-winning customer service at the Share Centre. That makes getting started as easy as possible.
What?
In fact, helping to set up ISAs has become a bit of an obsession.
Tom, clearly you love working at the Share Centre, but this is your idea of smooth talk on a date.
But find out about our no admin fee offers. Simply visit share.com/ISA. The Share Centre. Simply easier.
Mm-mm, I'm off.
The Share Centre Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Tax allowances and ISA benefits could change. Your capital is at risk.
Greetings, folks, to Living in the Rings Boxing Spotlight. My name is Felipe León from Boxeo Tijuana and FightNews.com. And you also may know me as the co-host of Living in the Ring every Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time here on the Living in the Ring Network. This show, the Boxing Spotlight, is a quick rundown of questions, remarks, opinions, of emails you guys have sent to our email account, which is livinginthering@gmail.com. Last week, we had our fearless leader, David Dueñas, doing the show where he gave his opinion over various subjects. This time around, this week, it's my turn, Felipe León. You also may know me from the defunct Leave It in the Ring show, In the Squared Circle, which I would touch on a little bit later on this half hour or so of boxing commentary. This show goes out primarily first to our Patreon pledgers, which we thank from the bottom of our hearts in supporting our journey here in the boxing world, where we're trying to bring you different shows and different ideas about boxing with Steve Kim, Guerra Montoya, David Dueñas, and myself, David Avila and Elena Baby Doll Reed on the 2-minute round every other Thursday, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world. So without much ado or further ado, let's go into the messages, the emails, to get a little bit of what I'm thinking about these different subjects regarding what's going on in the boxing world in the last week or so. The first one he mentions is that people are making a big deal about the pictures posted from the Chavez Jr., the Julio César Chavez Jr. and Saul Canelo Alvarez press tour and their face-off. A lot of people are making a difference about or talking about the size difference between them and also the catch weight, which the fight will be waged at if both make the weight, which is 164.5 pounds. Many believe that Chavez will be weight drained and or Canelo will be a lot heavier and maybe a little bit slower. So my thoughts on that is, you know, we all knew that Chavez Jr. obviously was a lot bigger, that the weight difference was or the size difference was somewhat remarkable between the two. This fight has been talked about in the Mexican press and in the boxing world, but more so in Mexico for quite a number of years. But as you know, as Saul Canelo Alvarez kind of hovered around the 154-pound weight limit and Julio César Chavez Jr. Kept going up, you know, first at 160 pounds and then he moved up and even fought at 168 and almost and against Fonfara, technically in the light heavyweight division, nearly hitting 175 pounds. Obviously, the talks for this fight, you know, withered away because the size difference was just too much. But after that whole year-long hiatus from Julio César Chavez Jr., and then for him to come back in pretty good shape against Dominic Bridge last December 10th in Monterrey, Mexico, and him actually coming in low under the 168-pound limit, he came in about 167 and change, then the talks resurfaced, you know, as soon as that Monday after the fight. And you know, that was the fight that a lot of people were talking about. Even though Gennady Golovkin, Triple G, is still, you know, part of the conversation for Saul Canelo Alvarez and to a certain extent for Julio César Chavez Jr., you know, the conversation has turned, the talks have turned quite a bit to Julio César Chavez and Saul Canelo Alvarez. Why? Because it's two Mexicans. They're prideful. We've seen that in the press tour. We've seen that in the bet about the purse. We've seen that in the things that they've said about each other. It looks like it's getting to be a little bit personal between them. Saul Canelo Alvarez has mentioned that he does not like the fact that Chavez Jr. is saying that he's going to knock him out, that he's going to beat him. But what do you expect for Chavez Jr. to say? I mean, the guy is in a fight. He obviously, he said it himself in an interview in Spanish, obviously. Hey, I'm in a fight. I want to knock him out. Obviously, I want to knock him out. And I obviously think I'm going to knock him out. And I obviously, you know, that's what my focus is on, because this is a fight. I'm not going to come in here thinking I'm going to lose the fight. And if I'm going to win the fight, I want to win it by knockout. So obviously, I'm confident of that. And that's what I'm going to say. So I thought that was a very valid point from Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. And for Saul Canelo Alvarez to take umbrage of Chavez Jr. stating that, I find it a little bit, you know, strange, but it is what it is. You know, as far as going back to the question about the weight size or the size difference between them, you know, we've seen pictures of them in the past standing next to each other, shaking hands and whatever the case may be. But this, during this past press tour that happened this just last week, which began in Mexico City, moved on to New York, then it stopped in Miami for some press, not an actual press conference in front of a crowd. But then also they resumed that crowd press conference in Houston and then ended up in L.A. We saw them do this face-off, and the size difference, the height difference is quite remarkable between Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and Saul Canelo Alvarez. Saul Canelo Alvarez, you know, being a shorter fighter in that weight class and at 154 pounds and quite quickly soon at 160, you know, his disadvantage is his height. He's not that tall of a guy to be fighting in that weight class. He is stocky. He has very broad shoulders and big legs. So he comes up to the weight. But, you know, as far as the height, he doesn't have it. And Julio Cesar Chavez does. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is a big kid. And you can see the difference in that. Now, as far as 64.5 pounds, of course, I mean, it would be crazy to think, it would be ridiculous to think that Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is not going to come in weight drain for that fight. I mean, if we all saw those pictures of his last weigh-in against Dominic Brice, I'm not going to go as far as say he looked dehydrated, but he did look, I mean, he did look, his cheeks were, sucked in and his skin looked pretty tight. I don't know if he was dehydrated. More than likely he was, but at 164.5, I think he will be a weight drain, but it all depends. I mean, this is one thing that I realized and I noticed and people talking about this. Show me a fighter that's not weight drain at their weight. You know, obviously we've seen the extreme cases where Jose Luis Castillo basically dragging himself into the room where he was going to weigh in for the second fight against Chico Corrales, may he rest in peace, you know, or all these other fighters who have struggled. Even Saul Canelo Alvarez, when he made 152 pounds against Floyd Mayweather, you know, he was dried out. His lips were chapped, dry. He looked horrible in that weigh-in. Even in his last weigh-in against Liam Smith, I mean, he had to take off his underwear to make the weight and get covered up by a towel. So to a certain extent, to a certain point, any fighter in this era who see an advantage in fighting in a weight class, which is way, way lower than they should be, get weight drain. I mean, just wait for Kell Brook at 147 pounds against Errol Spence. I mean, he said it time and time again that it's a battle for him to make that weight. So for any fighter to not be somewhat weight drain at their weigh-in, I mean, it's almost every fighter almost is, you know, when they're making that weight. But it is how it's going to affect them, how he gets there, how fast he gets there, how much he struggles to get there, and how he recuperates, more importantly, is what we're going to see the night of May 6th in the ring at the T-Mobile Arena. And that is on the shoulders of Angel Memo Heredia, the guy that Julio Cesar Chavez has entrusted to get him to the weight correctly. They worked together for 6 weeks against Dominic's Bridge. I had the opportunity to speak to Angel Heredia, Memo Heredia, at the weigh-in, and he mentioned that if he is given more time, 8 weeks in fact, that he will be able to do a lot better than what Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. looked for Dominic Bridge. But whether he looked good or bad, he made the weight. Maybe he did get tired in the later rounds in that 10-rounder against Dominic Bridge, but you know, he fought on and he lasted the 10 rounds and he was able to win the decision. So with 8 weeks, Memo Heredia assured the crowd and assured anybody that would listen that he could do a better job with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. So that, you know, that is the whole factor here. That is the biggest factor in this fight in my eyes is the size, you know, the size advantage. Whether Julio Cesar Chavez is, whether it's going to be an advantage for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. or it's going to be a disadvantage for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. because it's going to cost them to get down to 164.5. Because in my eyes, Saul Canelo Alvarez is a good fighter, but is he all that better than Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.? Technically, you know, he is faster. He has quicker hands. That is true. But his footwork is not on, isn't all that great. You know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is a plodding fighter, moves forward, takes punches to give his, but he always moves forwards. He doesn't stop throwing punches, and he always looks for the fight. Even when at a distance that doesn't make sense for him. You know, he's a tall fighter. He should be able to use his distance as his jab. But if you expect him to all of a sudden develop a jab and start using it a la Lamont Pearson, what we saw Lamont Pearson against David Avanesian a couple weeks ago under the tutelage of Nacho Bernstein, then you got a big shocker coming because that's not going to happen. You know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is going to go in there. He's going to look for that left hook to the body, and he's going to plot on. He's going to try to overpower Saul Canelo Alvarez, and Saul Canelo Alvarez is going to have to move laterally, which we've never really seen him do before. He did it quite a little bit against Liam Smith, and he's going to try to counterpunch Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and try to keep him off him. So with that said, is Saul Canelo Alvarez all that much better technically? Is he a much all that much better fighter that he could be able to neutralize and not make this size advantage for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. a factor? That's a big question. You know, as far as Saul Canelo Alvarez going up over to 164.5 pounds, yes, that's going to affect his speed. It's going to affect his stamina, which has not been all that great in the later half of his fights. So it is a factor. He's going to go in there heavier. Yes, we know that Saul Canelo Alvarez, even though he weighs at 154 pounds and he weighs in at 155 pounds, that he does balloon up to close to 170, 171. So weighing in at 164.5 and ballooning a little bit up, it's not shouldn't make that big of a difference. But you also got to remember that in the later stages of their training camps, you know, when they are dropping all that weight and getting down to that weight of 154, 155, 156, wherever Canelo has been fighting at, you know, it helps when you drop all that weight. It makes you faster. It makes you be able to have quicker hands and somewhat quicker feet. And when you're not, when he's not dropping that weight because he doesn't have to, and he said in an interview that he's going to come in at that limit of 164.5, that he's not going to look to come in any lighter, it is going to make a difference. I think he's not going to be as quick with his hand speed. I believe so. And we're going to see how that affects his fight plan against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Now, moving on to our second subject here, sent to the leaveitintheRing@gmail.com email account, which you can send all your questions, and then we would either answer them on the Leave It in the Ring show every Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. with the host David Duenas and myself co-host here, or on one of these boxing spotlights every week. David Duenas did the one last week. I'm doing the one for this week. And the second question is this: Juan Manuel Marquez, there's talks about Juan Manuel Marquez and Miguel Cotto finally meeting. There were talks last year, but those broke down. And then it broke down because of the size, you know, another fight in the size category where Miguel Cotto didn't want to get any lower than 150 pounds. Juan Manuel Marquez wanted nothing over 147. When they couldn't come to an agreement, Miguel Cotto ended up making the fight against James Kirkland. And we all know that that fight has been canceled because the official story is that James Kirkland hurt his nose or something to that effect. Some people think that he was too heavy and he wasn't going to make the weight. So The fight got canceled, and now the talks have resumed for a mega fight between Juan Manuel Marquez and Miguel Cotto. And if it happens, at what weight would be that fight, in our opinion? And how important is the venue location, and who has the more star power for leverage in that fight? Very good question, I believe. As far as I believe, you know, it wouldn't help Juan Manuel Marquez, who hasn't fought since May of 2014, to fight anywhere over 147, 148, and even quite possibly even as high as 149. We all know that he has been working with the aforementioned Angel Memo Heredia as the strength and conditioning coach in the past. He's the one that helped him get in fabulous shape, whichever way it was, against in that fourth fight against Manny Pacquiao. You know, we had seen Juan Manuel Marquez attempt to fight at welterweight before. He had a fight against Floyd Mayweather some years ago at 144 pounds. Floyd Mayweather actually didn't make that weight and had to pay when he weighed in at 146. But even in that fight, Juan Manuel Marquez did not look all that great physically. You know, he didn't make the weight right. He recognized that. He admitted it afterwards. And that's why he seeked out the help of Memo Heredia to help him get in shape for that fourth fight against Manny Pacquiao, which was around the welterweight limit. So since then, Juan Manuel Marquez has looked a lot better in that weight class. He's gotten to that weight. He's bulked up, which whatever means necessary, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of talk, and you guys all know it. But whichever way he got there, you know, it is what it is. And now, but against Miguel Cotto, who is a big guy, somewhat relatively to Juan Manuel Marquez. Juan Manuel Marquez is coming up from the 126, 122. That's what his natural weight class when he started in boxing. Miguel Cotto started at 135, but quickly went up to 140, struggled to make that weight in the later stages of his run in that division, and then has been fighting at welterweight for quite some time. And obviously we all know that he has made a run at 154 pounds, and even at technically middleweight by going up in the 157, 158 range, never really hitting the limit of 160 when he was a WBC middleweight champion by defeating Sergio Maravilla Martinez. So, you know, obviously the size advantage here is for Miguel Cotto. Height-wise, they're not that different. I mean, Miguel Cotto is a little bit taller, I believe. Juan Manuel Marquez is a little somewhat of a short guy, stocky. So I think that for Juan Manuel Marquez, in his best interest, it will be at 148, 149 tops, and even 149 just to make the fight. You know, 150, which Miguel Cotto said he was willing to do to a certain point, I think it's too heavy. I think that he would be giving up a little bit too much of an advantage if he had to go up to 149 and maybe even come in at 148 and a half or 148 to make the fight. I would see that happening, but you know, anything above that, I think he would be giving him too much of an advantage to Miguel Cotto. And you know, I'm sure that Juan Manuel Marquez is looking for the most fair fight that he can get, because that would be a tough fight after almost a three-year, you know, hiatus. You know, he's been going back and forth. He comes back, he doesn't come back, my family, this and this, that and that. And you know, to be facing a Miguel Cotto who hasn't fought either since late 2015 when he lost to Saul Canelo Alvarez, you know, but still, I think that Miguel Cotto is younger. He might not be the fresher of the two, but he is younger. You know, they've both been in quite a amount of wars and in big fights and tough fights. So just as a weight issue and as a safety issue and what's the best and advantage issue, I think that Juan Manuel Marquez shouldn't go any over 149 around there, you know, even coming at 148 and a half or maybe 148 and a quarter. As far as the venue, obviously Miguel Cotto would want this fight to happen in New York. You know, that is what he considers his home, even though he's from Puerto Rico, but he has fought at Madison Square Garden numerous times. Juan Manuel Marquez, I believe that he would want a little bit more neutral area, or maybe even a little bit more of an advantageous for him, like Las Vegas or even Los Angeles. So I think if I had any say in the issue and to make the fight happen, I think the best place for the fight would be Las Vegas. I mean, we've seen the Puerto Ricans travel. We've seen Miguel Cotto fight in Las Vegas, and he's done very well there. I mean, obviously not as good or not as well as in New York, but having the whole Mexico against Puerto Rico rivalry, Las Vegas, you know, if it were to happen in September, you know, try to go. I mean, if we're talking Canelo, Triple G. I mean, who knows? So try to go in September. You know, it could do well in Las Vegas. I don't know if Juan Manuel Marquez at this stage, giving up the weight and then having to give up the location and going to New York like in June or July for the Puerto Rican Day Parade. I don't know if Juan Manuel Marquez will be willing to do all that. I've heard that he has been offered pretty good amounts of money to face Manny Pacquiao in a fifth fight, and he has declined them. So I don't know how much they would have to offer him for him to agree to a 150-pound fight against Miguel Cotto and for it to be in New York City at the Madison Square Garden during June or July. I mean, I would imagine it would have to be a pretty good, hefty paycheck for him to agree to those terms. So if they were to make it in Las Vegas, I believe that, you know, that would kind of sway him a little bit more in taking the fight, being that it wouldn't be, you know, home court advantage for Miguel Cotto. So that is what I think as far as the location. And who has the more star power for leverage? I believe Miguel Cotto. You know, Miguel Cotto is a tried and true pay-per-view player. Juan Manuel Marquez has been in pay-per-views in the past, obviously against Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather Jr., but he's always been the B-side, whereas Miguel Cotto, although always, he has been the B-side as well as he was against Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather Jr., he's also had his own A-side events, and he's actually or been on par, you know, in a pay-per-view. You know, Antonio Margarito, he was the A-side for the Antonio Margarito fight, and other fights where he has been the A-side, perhaps against Sergio Martinez. So, you know, as far as star power and as far as being able to, you know, be the A-side, I think that Miguel Cotto would be the A-side in this fight. It's actually his company, Roc Nation, his promotional company, that's actually looking to make the fight. They're the ones that are offering the fight to Juan Manuel Marquez and not the other way around. So in this case, the star power here is Miguel Cotto. So going on to the next subject, and this is a pretty good subject, the WBC, as far as what I got the message from, David, it says the WBC mandates Carlos Cuadras, the former WBC super flyweight champion, against the current super flyweight WBC champion Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez if the rematch is possible. And still, does it look like Chocolatito wants the rematch? And if can Cuadras fight with more power the second time around? Well, you know, Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez, obviously he's a force to be reckoned in boxing right now. He is considered, if not the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, right there, up there. I mean, if you believe in that kind of stuff, if you follow that kind of stuff, the pound-for-pound list, you know, it's a reference point. You know, we can't, it's mythical. You know, you can't really, you know, prove anything. I mean, you can't say if Chocolatito Gonzalez would fight Triple G or Vasyl Lomachenko, who'd win, who cares, you know? But I mean, just go by in the skills and the resume and who they fought and the things they've done in their careers. Roman Chocolatito is up there. I mean, the guy has won four divisions, titles in four divisions, 105, 108, 112, 115. You know, he's undefeated. He's an icon in Nicaragua, his home country. And it's a fighter that everybody likes to see. You know, he's been coupled with Gennady Golovkin in a lot of his fights. He's, you know, he's making big strides for the little big men in boxing, being featured on HBO main event and all that. So you can't take anything away from Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. But I believe what I saw against this fight against Carlos Cuadras, which was a very, very tough fight, it was a very close fight, is that Chocolatito Gonzalez is playing with fire now. He's getting to the point where these guys are starting to become somewhat bigger than him, and they have somewhat of an advantage, maybe not skill wise obviously or talent wise because he is who he is and he is a great fighter, but these guys are no slouches. Carlos Cuadras is no slouch. He's a tough Mexican fighter. He knows how to fight. Maybe not as good, not as talented as Chocolatito Gonzalez, I'm sorry, but he's a good fighter, and having the advantage of the size made a difference in their fight. It was a struggle for Chocolatito Gonzalez. So Does Carlos Cuadras learn from his mistakes and is able to adjust in the rematch? I believe so. I believe that, you know, Carlos Cuadras left with a bitter taste in his mouth regarding that fight. A lot of people saw him win. A lot of people saw Chocolatito win, but it was a close, tight fight in the eyes of many people. So I think that perhaps Carlos Cuadras does learn from this, from his first fight, and he's able to adjust to a point to be able to beat Chocolatito Gonzalez in a rematch. Chocolatito Gonzalez, I mean, the rematch was talked about. It wasn't agreed to. Now Chocolatito Gonzalez is defending his title against a Thai fighter, I believe, on the undercard of Gennady Golovkin. That's his mandatory challenger. But we are expecting, and we should expect, for the rematch against Carlos Cuadras to be made sometime in 2017. Carlos Cuadras is also fighting on the same card, I believe, on the Gennady Golovkin card. So the whole promotion is there, putting him on the same card. You know, obviously, in the post-fight interviews, they're going to ask if both of them win these respective fights on March 18th. The obvious question is going to be to both of them, do you want to rematch against each other? And Carlos Cuadras, obviously, he's going to say yes if Chocolito wins, because he wants to get his title back. And Chocolito Gonzalez is going to have to, you know, he's going to have to answer. He's going to say yes. He's going to say, you know, if the money's right and blah, blah, blah. Well, he's always said, you know, and that's something that he has every right to do. So, I mean, obviously, this is prize fighting. They fight for a prize. The prize is a purse. It's money. So that's what they're looking to do. As far as the rematch, I believe it would happen. Obviously, they would have to get to the purses. Obviously, I hope that Chocolito Gonzalez doesn't ask for more than they can give him, so that we can see this fight. But you know what? I think it's a tough fight. I think it's a tough fight for him. I think it's you know, something that he has to get very ready for. Not that he didn't last time, but that he has to get very ready for, because I think that Carlos Cuadras is going to be able to do something different in the rematch. He's going to learn from those mistakes. He only suffered his first loss against Chocolatito Gonzalez, and I think he's hungry for it. And I think that the difference in weight and size might make a difference in the rematch. So we'll see. We'll see if that happens, and see if they could put that fight together. Hopefully they can. It looks like they're moving in the right direction, because they are putting them on the same card. So hopefully that fight does happen. And lastly, to touch on a message that David sent me also, that he's mentioned that he's been asked out about, is why did we discontinue on the Leave It in the Ring network, the In the Squared Circle with Felipe León? If you guys are familiar with that show, it was a show that we did every week, where I would quickly, in 30 minutes or less, give you a quick rundown of all the news and notes in boxing, the fight results, the upcoming calendar. We would get sound bites, give a little bit of opinion. But it was basically a 15-20 minute podcast of everything that happened in boxing in the last week. Very quickly, very concise, and to the point. Not much opinion, but just the news. But the reason that I decided to discontinue it after a year is because David Duenas asked me if I would co-host Leave It in the Ring with him. And then I felt that the network would have just too much of my voice on it. If I continue to do the In the Squared Circle, we would have, you know, that show In the Squared Circle every Monday. It would be, or every Tuesday, I believe it was. No, it was every Monday. And then we would have me on every Wednesday on Leave It in the Ring on the Leave It in the Ring show. And then we would have me every other Thursday on the 2-minute round, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world. So I thought it was just, in a weekly basis, it was just too much of Felipe León on the Leave It in the Ring network. And that's why I decided to discontinue it. Also, if you guys have had the chance, I don't know if you guys had, but every so often I do these in-depth 20-minute, 30-minute interviews with female fighters, kind of go in-depth about how they started in boxing and their experience in boxing. And we've been putting all those on those. We've been putting those interviews on as special events here on the network. So that would be something else you'd be listening to me on. Plus, I would feel that if I did these type of things, like the Boxing Spotlight and other projects that I've been thinking about putting on here, it was just to be too much. So that's why I discontinued the In the Squared Circle. But I appreciate all of you guys asking for that. So We have reached the end of this boxing spotlight, but I urge you to listen and look for the other shows here on the network. Leave It in the Ring. Every Monday night at 4 p.m. Pacific, we have the next round with the great Steve Kim, and Gabriel Montoya will be coming back in March after a little bit of a hiatus. Every Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time, we have the flagship show, Leave It in the Ring, with David Duenas and myself, Felipe León. And every other Thursday, including this Thursday, which is March 2nd, we have the two-minute round with Mr. David Avila, Miss Elena Baby Doll Reed, and myself, where we talk all about female boxing. And we might have a very, very special guest. We're trying to close down this guest. We're trying to get him to go on the show this Thursday with us. So hopefully, if you follow us on Twitter at Leave It in the Ring, you'll be able to see who that guest is going to be. I can't really say right now because we have not secured it. But if we do, it's going to be good. You might want to listen to the two-minute round. And then, obviously, we would have the other shows that we're working on here with your patronage on Patreon.com. If you haven't pledged so far, please do. Help us out. Anything helps. $1, $2, $3, $5, $20 a month helps us to develop these shows. Actually, David just finished wrapping up Around the Ring, which by the sound of it, he told me it came out great. That show is a panel of different people. This time, the first one coming out, it's David Duenas. It's a writer for three more rounds, or three rounds, I believe. It's called, his name is Ramon Aranda. We have international ring announcer Lupe Contreras and former middleweight champion Kelly Pavlik on a round robin panel talking about different subjects, and that's why it's called Around the Ring. It's about to come out. And we've been able to do those kind of shows. This is like PBS for boxing. This is like the PBS, the public broadcasting service or system for boxing. You pledge with us, you help us get a little bit of funds, and we're going to bring you great boxing shows. And that's one of the ones that they're working on, Around the Ring, which will be coming out this week. So it's the same thing. It's like PBS, like Sesame Street, this and all that stuff. You know, 1, 2, 3 Contact and all those shows. You know, those, I don't even remember that other show, something theater, Masterpiece Theater, things like that. Those kind of shows, but on our network, it's all about boxing. You pledge, we give them to you. We thank you, and I hope you enjoyed this boxing spotlight, and we'll see you next time.